Welcome to Late of the Rings, a podcast dedicated to Lord of the Rings, the card game. My name's John, and I haven't really thought of anything to say, but he's definitely, definitely been on the gaffer's home brew. It's my good friend, Emery.
Hello, John.
Hello, sir.
I haven't been on... Well, I have, but that's not the point.
So I started the theme music there, and then I realised that the train was rolling, and I had no destination.
Just hit go and see what happens. It'll be fine. Hi, everybody.
So here we are, recording again, so swiftly.
Hallelujah. As promised.
We're nothing if not men of our words.
We're nothing.
No, but it is good to be recording again. We have scheduled in several attempts to record this episode over the past, let's say, 3 to 6 months. And various things have gotten our way. Not to go into too many details, but actually we both experienced a bit of illness, but recovered now, I'm pleased to say. But it has been a bit of a turbulent winter in regards to our health. That sounds a bit dramatic, but it...
Yeah. Nothing that bad.
Yeah, but yes. You wouldn't want to hear us record.
No, absolutely not. But I think, the winter of... I won't use the word discontent. The winter of... I was going to say disrepute, but then that sounds like we've been up to a whole load of bad stuff, which we haven't at all.
No.
The winter seems over now.
Yes.
What are we now? End of March?
Yep.
You know, for some people, it's post-gone furniture season for idiots. Oh, God, don't get a look on your face. Well, I have something to say about that, but I'll talk about that in a minute.
You brought it up.
No.
So this ties into us wanting to record. So last weekend, we had planned to record, and I don't know what went wrong then. Several things went wrong. But I had some time off work, so I had a long weekend, and I thought, well, okay, I've got a long weekend, I do plan to record. But actually, maybe it's time I started tidying up the garden, you know? I've got to clean the slabs, get that garden furniture uncovered.
Hold on.
But I knew I had a few days in which to do it. So, you know, I could do it nice and relaxed. And we planned to record, so we had that scheduled in. And then that didn't happen. So I couldn't really start doing anything in the garden then because my brain was in a completely different space. And then the following day...
We're very much blokes. We can only do one thing on an entire weekend.
And sometimes not even that. So the next day I decided to take a walk out of the city and hike in the wilderness. And it was lovely. It was a beautiful day. The sun was out and then occasionally some very sharp showers. But that, I kind of like that. I like to be challenged.
Yes.
By the weather.
Challenging hikes.
But it was very pleasant. I thought, oh, do you know what? If the weather stays like this tomorrow, we'll still have one more day.
Oh, God. And?
I'm going to get out there, I thought.
You thought or you did?
No, I did not. Because on that day, let's call it the last day, we were confronted by the most insane hailstorms.
Oh, yes. That's right.
It was
crazy, to be honest. And it hurt. They were tiny hails, weren't they?
Oh.
But they were coming down at a rate.
Yeah. Oh, my days.
I got caught in that. Yeah.
Well, I didn't get caught in it. I just looked out there. I thought, I'm glad my furniture's covered up still.
Exactly. Now, good. So I'm glad that nature, you know, stopped your temptation there.
Well, first of all, you stopped it by planning to record. Then my desire to leave the city stopped it. And then nature.
So, you know, the triple whammy.
The trifecta.
Desire, nature, and me. Now, my sister she decided that we had a couple. And remember, after that hailstorm day, there were a couple of beautiful days of weather.
Yeah, I was back at work.
Yeah. what her and my brother-in-law decided to do was uncover their garden furniture.
Oh, no.
Unbeknownst to me, obviously I would have advised them differently. Three days later, she sends me a picture of, they have this sort of like garden table thing with like a glass top. And it was basically upside down after a torrential day of stormy winds and glass smashed all over the patio. She's all complaining, oh, this country, oh, you can never trust the weather. I was like, it's like this every single year. How many times do I have to tell you? So I think she's finally learnt her lesson as well, I think. But
does she not listen to the show?
I don't think she knows it exists.
So she is wise in something.
Yes, yes, yes. Actually, she's a big fan of Lord of Rings, and she's a big fan of playing games, actually. I don't know why I've never...
She just doesn't
I've mentioned it to her.
She just doesn't like us.
She ain't got the time. It's like one more thing in my life. No.
Well, she can't squeeze it in one episode a year.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I meant more in terms of actually like knowing and playing the game.
Ah.
Us as enthusiasts, we found it challenging at times, didn't we? But we'll come to that on this episode, obviously. Okay, but aside from your garden furniture debacle, what else have you been up to?
Not much
in the short 4 months or whatever it is.
Not much. I mean, it's mostly that. Mostly looking out the window and waiting. And I'll tell you what I have done in relation to the podcast is I've obtained a new setup for all my recording equipment in anticipation for us recording again. So it was nice to finally unbox that.
Yeah. Did you do an unboxing video? Those things always amaze me. Like, I didn't realize that was such a thing as an unboxing video. Until fairly recently. And then it's like, some of these things seem to be quite popular. It's like literally somebody opening, like taking something out of a box. It's a bit like, I can't quite get my head around it. I know there's something exciting about when you receive a package, you get it and you take it out yourself. Oh, it's exciting. But then watching somebody else do that is, I don't know. Okay, each their own. I'm not judging it.
You're not so fun around people's birthdays, are you?
Oh, Christmas Day, I just sit there with my arms folded until it's my turn.
Yeah, come on, gee.
It might be fun for you, ain't fun for anyone else.
Yeah. What do you want us to do? Watch?
Yeah. But it's not, I don't know, it's just like, it's more of the act of taking it out of the package. Mm. I think some people are just into packaging.
Do you think it's about the packaging? Not the product inside.
Yes. Wow. And or maybe some kind of empathy to that sense of excitement of receiving something new. You know, you can almost smell the little silicone bag that comes inside.
Do you think are they particularly smelly?
Well, no, I don't know. Are they? I don't know. I think they're there to prevent anything like that, to prevent moisture or anything going off or whatever.
Yeah. No, I think
they're odorless silicone.
I think it's probably, but I'm probably wrong because I don't know what people are into. It's probably so if people are also considering purchasing said item, which is boxed, they can see it and see it come out of a box. So you can see what you're getting. Or am I thinking far too literally?
Yeah. No, I mean, perfect. That's basically it, isn't it? I would have bought that product. However, I didn't like the way the act of unboxing it isn't going to be what I was expecting. So
I'll probably give it a miss.
Yeah. Actually, I say all this. I can actually weirdly see the appeal. I can understand why people would enjoy that, actually. It's not for me, but I can sort of understand it. I guess. I'm trying to be nice.
You're not doing a very good job.
I know. So much for my earnestness. Yeah.
This equipment.
So sorry.
And I'm quite excited to hear how it comes out. And I'm actually, you know, I'm touching a lot of wood. That sounds very wrong. that it will record because it's a completely new setup and, you know, we've had our mishaps in the past. But this is definitely a step up. So I'm curious to see how I sound. And if anyone wants to comment on my audio quality specifically, please feel free.
Yeah, don't worry about me.
No. You'll just sound the same.
Supporting cast.
Mm-hmm. No comment. but it has lots of switches, buttons and levers and lights. So I might actually at some point finally get my wish of jingles and sound effects. I've always found sound effects highly amusing, too amusing.
Same here. Oh dear, that's something yet again we have in common. Oh yeah, that's the future we see. There are some classics though. Like I've always thought, I found out the name of this and now I've forgotten it. That sound of somebody being gutted in a cartoon. It's like that kind of muted trumpet thing which just goes wah, 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 wah. That one.
I think you'll find it.
Yes, that's the one. That actually has a proper name. It's known in the cartoon industry. But whoever came up with that is some kind of genius. Like, what would be the sound of somebody just being licked, gutted, whatever? And it's what genius came up with that is so perfect.
Well, to be honest, I didn't think obviously there's some, as you can now tell, there are some pre-built sound effects in this box.
Oh, I thought you just got a trumpet out of it.
I didn't think we would need that. It was on page 4. I moved it right to the back.
There you go, 5 minutes in.
5 minutes in, first one used.
Okay, right, we set a bad precedent here, I think.
So that's what I've been doing. I have been unboxing and setting up new recording equipment and looking out the window and not, as of this date, uncovered any garden furniture.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear it. You've learnt your lesson well, my friend. You've guaranteed us 3 weeks of great weather. Great. Let's take it.
Yeah.
Sitting on the ground in the garden.
Why not? And yourself, sir, have you been up to anything interesting these past 6 months?
Well, we've had Christmas, haven't we? But let's not go first. No. I can't be talking about Christmas right now. What else have I been up to? I finished watching, I think last time we recorded, I was most of the way through Miami Vice when I was watching that. I finished that.
Oh, blimey, yeah.
So I finished that. That was great. 5 series.
Five stars.
Five stars, of course. Anything. It was all right. 5 stars. I'm not sure if other people do this. Maybe it's a weird thing I do. When I finish watching like a long series, right, and it ends, and what I like to do is then go back and just watch the first one or maybe 2 episodes of the whole series again. And I don't know why, but it seems to give me like a sense of closure in my mind and the sense of like, oh God, yeah, that's what it was like right at the start. Because obviously the shows change massively as they go through. I remember I did that with this. I did it with like when I watched all of those Buffy series.
Okay, you went all the way back. Wow, okay.
And just watched literally the first episode just to see how far it comes, just that sort of, because I think when you finish the series, you're often like left with that, obviously the emotion and the feeling of that last episode, which is great. I like to leave it like that for a while. But then when you go back and just watch the first one again, it kind of resets the whole thing in my head. And it's probably a bit of a weird thing.
Well, this would be very dangerous for me if it was Buffy, because I would just start watching again.
Well, that was the problem, because I watched the first one and I got halfway through the second one immediately afterwards. I said, no, well, hold on. Stop it now, because you're going to do the whole thing again. So yeah, anyway, so I finished watching that. I haven't really watched much in the ways of sort of series or anything since then, actually. Or like new movies, really.
Have you gone to see the new Dune yet?
No, I haven't. I did see the first one in the cinema.
Yes, but that was years ago. We've even done podcasts since then.
And then. But then I did rewatch it.
Ah.
That's one thing. I did rewatch that a couple of weeks ago because we had planned with a couple of people to go and watch it in the cinema, and it hasn't happened yet, but I'm sure it will happen next couple of weeks. But yeah, that's a long film.
Yeah.
What did you think of June? Did we do this? Did we talk about it? Well, I can't remember.
We did talk about it, but we had talked about it when you had seen it and I hadn't.
Okay.
I have since seen it and I liked it very much. I didn't think it was too short.
No, I didn't. It's long, but it's not too long. I think it just, it works.
Yeah.
And I quite liked the shots of like the desert and all of that. I could watch that stuff for hours.
No, it's been a long time since I watched it, to be honest, but I did enjoy it. I thought it was exceptionally well made and I've heard nothing but praise for the second one. So yeah, it's just whether or not I can bite the bullet and go and sit in the cinema for however long it is and watch it.
When I watched it the first time, watched it towards the end of a release, and there was literally maybe 20 people in the whole cinema. Mm. I went to see my dad, actually, so because he's a massive science fiction fan. So I'd actually read the books when I was younger. But that was great, actually. So it's nice and chilled out. I much prefer that these days rather than sitting in a packed cinema and people eating popcorn and all that.
No, people don't want to go to the cinema to watch a film. They want to go there for a meal and a chat.
Yeah, look at their phone. It's like, come on, what's going on here? So I think, once it sort of dies down a bit, I think I'll go and see that. Did you ever read the books?
Well, not all of them. I read I think we talked about this before. So we did do a podcast for over a year, and what we'll do on this one is just retread old ground.
Recap all the stuff we've done before. And then we'll do, and then towards the end of the podcast, we'll talk about A Journey Through Mirkwood.
I don't even think it's called that.
Yes, I can't remember.
Passage.
The Passage. Passage down the Andrian.
I read some of the books, but I think, just to recap, I think I'd seen the David Lynch film first, and then I started,
which
books.
We're both fans of.
Yes. It has problems.
Not everyone is.
No.
Yeah. No, but I saw that when I was quite young.
Yeah, me too.
I loved it.
Yeah, so. But also, it's a pretty far out story. I think people are now more willing to accept these sort of things as stories on screen in general. So I think it was so far ahead of its time to put this on screen.
It is pretty mental. And then once you get past that first trilogy of books, I'm not sure if you've read like the fourth one. I think I actually stopped about halfway through either the fifth one or the sixth. I can't remember. But it just gets so abstract and so crazy and goes over such a vast period of time that it becomes very incohesive, and you can't really hold it all in. Well, I didn't have the brain power probably to hold everything in my mind, and it started to lose a bit of the humanity, I think, of the first ones. But those first three are definitely worth reading. They're pretty. I mean, if you think the films are crazy, so much more happens in the books. Yeah. They're absolutely mental. There's such a dense book, especially the first one.
Yeah, the first one is really a work of genius.
Yeah, or a work of drugs. Probably both, let's face it. Not advocating. We are advocating genius, eh? Go ahead and be a genius.
But don't harp on about it.
Okay.
So, other than not going to the cinema to see Dune 2, have you done anything else?
I hadn't gone to a gig in ages for various reasons. But I went to three in the last couple of weeks, randomly. So,
randomly?
I just walked down the street. Oh, there's a gig. I just popped it. No, who did I see? I saw, first saw Dive.
Oh, yeah.
As in D-I-I-V. Mm-hmm. They were really good. I've seen them a few times. Yeah, if you're into that kind of thing, I don't know how you describe them, their style's changed a bit, got a little bit heavier, but like slightly shoegazing.
Yeah, I was going to say, are we going to say shoegazing? We are.
Yeah, it is what it is. So they were great. And then the Pixies are on tour at the moment. So I'm a big Pixies fan. I've seen them a few times. So went for a few people to see them play.
I hope they play Our Own Sons.
Well, yes. Our Own Sons. Well, actually, funnily enough, I just thought of that. Actually, there is a Pixies link to this episode. I'll come back to it later.
Okay.
See, I haven't changed. We'll talk about it later. They were doing Doolittle and Trompe Le Monde, their last two albums of the first time around, just back to back, and a few encores. So great. And then last week I saw The Smile, which is that Tom York, Johnny Greenwood sort of side project thing. That was great as well, actually. So three really good gigs in the space of like 2 weeks.
And now you're poor.
Oh, well, I am after that. Jeez Louise. It's like, so this is the thing about gigs.
It's crazy.
People think like it's the band that's ripping you off, but it isn't. It's like the venues and the promoters. And they just think, right, if people are going to, they're just whacking on the fee. So yeah, I think the tickets to like that small, it was at Alexandra Palace, which is not the best venue for music gigs anyway. Just because it's got low stage and it's completely flat. So if you're, I'm quite tall, so I'm quite lucky. But if you're not, you're not going to be able to see much if you're like halfway back. And it's such a nightmare to get to and from. There's like one train station, which everyone goes to. And then anything else is like, you've got to walk miles, basically. It was a great night. But yeah, it was something ridiculous, like 60 quid a ticket or something. Or something stupid like that. So, or 65 quid with any, some additional fee as well. It's stupid.
It's nuts.
Just to see a concert.
No, it's crazy. Yeah. I mean, I used to go to concerts, well, like all the time, like once a week, once every 2 weeks. I as we get older, you'd think you'd have more sort of disposable income and ability to go and see more of these things. Now I have to be so specific about a concert I want to go and see that it has to really matter. But actually, what I plan to do now is actually sort of try and regain a bit of my old gig going self, where I'd go and find some new stuff which I may not know anything about, to literally randomly find myself at a few concerts that don't cost me very much to go in.
Exactly.
See some new music, see some live music, and then also I think there's less sort of pressure on the evening. Because I that's what I find that these things have become. It's like, well, we're gonna go out to this concert, and it had better be good, and it had better be an experience of my life, because
my week's wages for it. In fact, funnily enough, that was that's exactly what I used to do as well. So I used to mix it up with gigs. Yeah, like you, I used to go every week to a gig or whatever. A lot of the time it'd be, cost you a tenner to get in somewhere, some band you don't barely know, and they're often sometimes the best ones. Yeah, sometimes they're rubbish too, but it's great. We'll just sit in the back, have a couple of drinks and have a laugh, whatever, you know. But I think you're so right when you describe it like that. You have to make it a bit of an event. It does put pressure on it. And those big ones tend to be at venues which aren't that great. Over here in London, we got like the O2, which was what the Millennium Dome went to.
For your old timers out there.
Yeah, so again, really hard to get to. I don't think it's very conducive sort of for music, personally. Nightmare queuing system was when I went there. You know, all of that, Alexandra Palace, same kind of thing. And then you got other venues like where all the big bands used to go, like Brixton Academy, stuff like this. Like, no one goes there anymore.
No.
It's like, so instead of doing like, two nights or three nights at Brixton, they're just going to do one night
exactly.
at O2.
Yeah.
Whereas it's miles better before. Obviously, it's more gigs for the band, but it was definitely better that way. Because I think there's something also, once you get, it was a perfect size, something like Brixton Academy so I don't know how many people, I'm so bad at judging it, but it was
over
a really
10?
Good size.
Would you say?
No, I don't think so. Over 10. Oh, 10 people. Yes. Potentially. It's got a slope, so you can see from everywhere.
Brixton.
If you're a big band, yeah.
Didn't the Forum also have that, a slope in it? Or am I mixing it up?
In Kentish Town?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where I saw the Pixies and Dive, actually. They both played fair. So that was,
I saw
wicked,
the White
actually.
Stripes there many years ago.
Oh, did you? How was that?
Rubbish. No, of course it was amazing. I think it was their first ever UK tour, so that was really something.
Yeah, that's a proper, that's a good venue. I like that. Now it's for O2 Forum. Everything's O2. It's like I mean, even Brixton's owed to. They've taken over. Anyway, that's my old man gripe for the day.
Well, that's yet to be seen if that's your only old man gripe for the day.
Yeah, we have time. Yeah.
Okay, so shall we do some discussion on Lord of the Rings, the card game?
Let's do it, John. Let's get involved.
Now, I was going to say, this is normally the point where we would say we're going to talk about a specific quest. So if you don't want spoilers, but yes. I cannot imagine there is anyone who's listening to this and going, oh, Watcher in the Water. No, not played that yet. I'm not listening to this. Because if you're listening to this episode, you have probably been waiting for it. I mean, maybe that's a bit presumptuous. I mean, you've definitely been waiting.
Yes. Well, let's give a spoiler warning anyway.
Okay. Well, in this episode, we are going to be discussing the quest, The Watcher in the Water. So if you want to avoid spoilers and you have not played that quest yet, you may want to skip this episode entirely. Or if you don't mind spoilers, then we are going to start talking about it from now.
Can I just say?
Yes.
I think that's the first time that you called it The Watcher in the Water.
Is that wrong?
Which is what the quest is actually called.
Oh.
So I think that's the first time you've got it. I was waiting for Watcher in the Water.
A Watcher in the Water.
So yeah, there you go. Oh, out of practice. Well, you're getting it right.
Yeah, good for me. Do you know what? I mean, we won't harp on too much on how long it's been since we've recorded a proper episode of the podcast. I mean, people are well aware of this. But I did have a little look at when I finally started to play this quest in anticipation of recording the next episode of the podcast. And I put a little teaser on Board Game Geek, a little photo. Ooh. Of the encounter deck, sort of all poised. I thought, oh, this will get the fans' juices going, you know, that soon we'll be back, because we've probably been away from everyone's ears for quite some time at that point. And I posted that picture on March the 11th, 2023.
Wow. Okay. It's still there. Well, in terms of playing, I know when we did the bonus episode.
Bonus?
When we did the bonus episode, I sprung on you the fact that I'd actually played Watcher in the Water a couple of days before we did that.
Yes.
And here we are 4 months later or 5 months later, whatever. And, and I haven't played it since. So I've been desperately scrabbling around. And what we also mentioned in that one is that we had played it together.
Yes.
When we were together last summer. So we'd played it two-player, so it's obviously fresh in our minds.
Well, the thing is, I've played this quest on and off now since March the 11th, 2023. I haven't played it recently.
You still haven't done it.
Well, do you know what? I mean, spoilers. If I never play this quest again, it will be too soon.
Well, it is quite a... It's quite a fighty one, isn't it? So,
yeah, but I usually quite like that. I mean, I've enjoyed playing it. This is we're doing the summary at the beginning here. I've enjoyed playing it, but I've literally been playing it on and off now for 12 months.
We need to move on.
It's time we move on.
This will be the spark, John. It's like it'll be motivation for us just to move on. Do you know what I have in my hand?
Is it the insert sheet?
I have the insert sheet. Should I give it a read?
Oh.
For old time's sake?
Oh, it's like riding a bike.
All right, let's go. Let's do it. Okay, so The Watcher in the Water, difficulty level 5. To be discussed.
To be discussed.
Elrond is disturbed.
Yes.
Oh, sorry, there's a continuation of that sentence. Elrond is disturbed by the report of Arwen's journey to Rivendell. Remember that? A Journey to Rivendell, The Journey to Rivendell. He has requested that the heroes discover the source of the increased orc activity along the Misty Mountains. This guy is always... It's never good news when you're getting orders from Elrond, is it?
No.
It's like, come on.
Come on, mate.
Like, haven't you got like an army or something, haven't you? Anyway, the mission has led the party south to Moria, but the doors of Durin are blocked by a deep, dark lake. Doesn't sound ominous at all.
No.
As the heroes make their way around its waters, an ancient evil stirs from within its depths. A desperate battle begins, and the heroes must drive the creature away or find safety in the mines. Ben just tells you which cards you need to do the setup. Then there's four more little sections to this. So the first one is setup. This is just what it says on the first card anyway, but it says, when setting up for Watcher in the Water, remove for Watcher in the Water and Doors of Durin from the encounter deck, set them aside out of play. These cards are placed away from the playing area and do not interact with the game until instructed by the cards of the scenario. Not really a spoiler. You already know that from just looking at the first card. Now, does this sound about Doors of Durin? I'm not sure if this is exactly necessary. And we'll come to... Maybe we should skip this one. I'm not sure because it's... Because it just says what it says on it. Do you want to read it? Or?
But if no, because we haven't seen it on the card yet, have we?
Let's come back to it. It says the same thing. Right. Then there's two other sections. The last section is about secrecy, which we've seen before.
Yeah.
It just explains about secrecy, so I won't go over that again. And the next one, if I'm correct in remembering this, this is the first time we see it. And it says regenerate X keyword. I think it's the first time we've seen it.
I think you're right. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so this is an important one, actually, because you won't know this just by playing the game. You have to know the rule beforehand. So regenerate X keyword. An enemy with the regenerate keyword heals damage from itself equal to the specified amount each round. This takes place immediately following the passing of the first player token during the refresh phase and occurs before player action. So essentially, really, the first thing that happens in the whole round is that's when a regeneration occurs. So that's important to know, I think.
No. Yes.
During the refresh phase.
Yeah, so it's the last thing that happens.
Ah, okay. So literally the last thing that happens.
Yeah,
okay, fine. Because you pass a player token at the end
of the refresh. Yes, but right. It says before player actions. I think that there is that sneaky player action window right at the end
of the
refresh phase. Whether or not you can capitalize on that, I do not know.
It's good to point out, though. That's good to be aware of that. Yeah, so this happens at the very, very end, but there is still an action window afterwards before the next round. Yeah, okay.
Has your threat already gone up at that point? Or does your...
Yes.
Yeah, so your...
threat goes up at the end during the refresh phase, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, not at the beginning. Yes, no, it does.
Yeah, so your threat's already gone up.
Then you pass the player token if you're playing two-player.
Yeah. Yeah,
and then you do
there's
the
regeneration.
Regenerate, and then there's an action window, and that's the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Yeah.
All right. Okay, so that's the insert sheet. So shall I move on to the... Yeah.
It was good. It was concise.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how I like it. So a bit of flavor around the mission, but not too much. I don't like, you know, like we've said before, I don't want to have a story written for me here. I'd like to let my imagination go a bit, you know.
Yeah, I know.
So, okay. All right. So the first quest card, there's only two. The first one, 1A, to the West Door. to the West Door. Elrond has asked you to scout for Mines of Moria on your return to Lorien, hoping to discover if it is the source of the increased orc activity along the Misty Mountains. Thank you, Elrond.
Yeah.
Set up. Remove the Watcher and the Doors of Durin from the encounter deck and set them aside out of play. So I guess let's ignore those cards for now.
Yeah.
I would suggest we come back to them. Okay. Flip it over. 1B. So you can see that there's 13 progress required to get through this. And the text says, your approach is blocked by a dark lake that slumbers beneath the face of the cliffs. You must search for a way around the water. When revealed, reveal cards from the encounter deck and add them to the staging area until there is at least X threat in the staging area. X is twice the number of players in the game.
Okay. Okay. So if you're playing solo, it's a threat of 2 needs to be revealed, and 2-player threat of 4, etc., etc.
Yeah. Yeah. Or not necessarily needs to be revealed, needs to be in the staging area. So if you've already got 2 in there, you just do it as normal.
What? No, when
so, revealed- so you don't need to reveal 2 from the encounter deck. If you've already got 2 or 3 or 4 whatever in the staging area,
yeah,
then you just reveal 1 card as normal if you're playing 1 player.
Reveal? No. This is basically still the kind of the setup before the game begins. So you took when revealed of card 1B. So when we flip this card over, the first thing you do is start uncovering cards from the encounter deck until there is 2 threat in the staging area.
But when you start at the beginning anyway.
Always start at the beginning.
Yes, always the best place.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good point. Okay, so now here's my memory coming in there. So when you start the game normally, right, if you don't have something like this, you always, if you're playing 1 player, you reveal... Well, no, you don't reveal anything.
That's just staging.
It just depends on the... Yeah, exactly. It just depends on the quest. Yep, no, ignore what I said. You're quite right. Well, that's how this podcast is going to go.
Normal service has been resumed.
At least it wasn't cheating. All right. Just inadvertent errors. Okay. So there you go. So when revealed, so let's talk about this card right here. When revealed, you got to keep adding cards to the staging area until you've got at least 2 threat in it. If you're playing 1 player or 4 if you're 2 player or 6 if you're 3 player, etc. And that's it.
Oh, I had a fun one with this. See, this is my memory's going to keep coming up. By the way, I do have a notes file on my phone and on my computer here with sort of not necessarily every time I played the game over the past year, but a few. And I've not looked back at it yet, but I will have to dive in to sort of jog my memory of how I played it. So whether or not I can make head nor tail of any of it is to be seen, but we will see. But I did just remember in this deck, the encounter deck is the mountain warg.
Oh, your old buddy.
My old buddy, the old mountain warg. Now, I remember that whenever the mountain warg is present, there's also the warg's lair, which is a location. I'm not going to dig it out now. I've seen it enough times to do it by memory, which I think does give you the threat required, but it also has the lovely added effect that it will go and dig out a mountain warg from the encounter deck for you. So you can, and did on several occasions, reveal the warg's lair. as your first card in setup, and then you are confronted not only with 2 extra threats in the staging, you also have a particularly nasty location and a mountain warg before you started the game.
Lovely.
It happened to me on so many occasions.
They're just drawn to you, John.
Yeah, I know.
That's often the way, isn't it, with dogs. If someone's not a dog person, the dog will be naturally drawn to them.
I love dogs. It's wargs I hate.
Fair point. Nasty critters.
Okay, so basically we start with... Actually, it's quite simple, he says. So we basically start with some extra threat in the staging, and we just have 13 progress to quest past.
So when you first look at it, you think, oh, this is quite questy.
A doddle.
It's just going to quest through. But as you very, very quickly find out, due to the cards in the deck, that is not what happens.
No.
So what you find is straight away you have some pretty nasty enemies. You've already mentioned wargs, for example. There's a few of our old trusty friends that crop up in this one. But then what we also have is obviously a bunch of new ones as well. I think we've got, so there's a handful of, I think there's three enemies. If we don't include For Watcher, we'll come to sort of later on. I think we've got four locations and three treacheries as well. And there's some nasty and very annoying stuff in here.
Oh, some doozies.
Some doozies.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think we necessarily need to go over any of the ones we've seen before. I mean, we've got our old friends, the Black Uruks, in there, and the Wargs, as we said. But I mean, maybe if we have any stories, they might crop up. But I think we should probably just focus on the new cards. And in particular, I think we will spend some time looking at the various tentacles.
Yes, let's talk about tentacles. So here you are. So you started the quest. And what you'll probably like to see sooner rather than later is some kind of tentacly thing.
I mean, yeah, the Watcher is not around right now, but his tentacles sure are.
Yep. In fact, in the I was trying to remember the book around this, and I think it is in the book, but it's a bit more abstract and hidden. If I recall correctly, in the film, that is exactly what happens, isn't it? Like, you see the tentacles and they grab some of it, and then eventually at the end you see that big massive monster come up. And
it's, well, it doesn't. Sort of, it grabs it. I think, if I'm remembering correctly, it kills Bill the Pony. And they
in
don't
the book.
Are they, yeah, and they don't put that in the film because it's a bit much. So,
yeah. It's all right, people getting killed and Elsa, but yeah. A pony? That's pony. What kind of Come disgusting on. Sickness is it?
No, because actually in the film, they let Bill go, and it's Aragorn.
Mine's no place for a pony.
Yeah, Aragorn says to Sam, the mine is no place for a pony. And off he trots. And I remember sitting in the cinema when I didn't mind long films and thinking, oh my God, they're just going to let Bill walk away a little bit and then get massacred.
Well, it's, no, that pony clearly made its way back home.
It did.
That's how it plays through in my mind.
Oh yeah, that pony is retired somewhere.
Yeah, let's speak nothing else of it. It'd be fine.
I would have liked a little extra scene in the extended version with Sam just going, what was that? And
It's Bill the fully grown horse.
Oh no, I was thinking more that you'd hear sort of some splashing sounds, but just off camera. And Sam's like, what's that?
Oh, just after he left.
Yeah, just after he left. And then Aragorn's like, it's nothing.
Yeah. The mine's no place for a pony.
Yeah.
But sadly, Samwise, neither are the shores of this dark lake. Sorry. We shouldn't have told you not to take the pony in the first place. It's on you. Sam would be gutted. He'd be like, pony meat could have fed us.
Yeah. Ooh. He had the salt.
In the French version. No. No. Okay.
So, right. So, Bill the Pony is definitely alive.
Bill the Pony's gone. He's alive. He's all good.
But we do have to face some tentacles. Should we look at these tentacles now? Because
let's have a look.
Because they are all, well, some of them are much worse than others.
Mm.
And some are very copable with, and some are. What's the opposite of copable?
Incopable.
My learned friend.
Unhandleable? Impossible? I don't know.
Well, tentacles. Go on, pick one. Pick a tentacle at random.
And okay, do you want to pick? I'll pick one at random. Okay, I'll pick one. We have three tentacles. I'll pick one at random. And I'm going with the striking tentacle. Okay, I'll go with 40 for simplest, I think. So, Striking Tentacle has a, what was that number in the top left? Or how do you refer to that again?
Threat.
Threat. It's not the threat, is it? It's the 18.
Oh.
The
Sorry. That's it's engagement cost.
Engagement cost, yes. God, I'm out of practice. Okay. So the engagement cost of 18, threat of 2, hits for 4.
Yeah, you don't want a threat of 18. That would be no good.
Yeah, that's game over. It hits for 4, got a shield of 1. It's got 3 hit points. And it is of type tentacle. And it has a forced effect. And it says, forced, when striking tentacle attacks, discard the top card of the encounter deck. If that card has a shadow effect or is a tentacle enemy, this attack is considered undefended. Ouch. And there are a fair few tentacles in here.
Oh, my God.
And there's a fair few shadows as well. So I think your odds of getting this aren't... You know, the tentacle ones don't have shadow effects on them, mm-hmm. but they're all tentacles. So yes. It's really annoying. So this guy hits for 4. So an undefended... You're taking an undefended on this guy and suddenly... Somebody's in some big trouble.
Now,
horrible stuff.
And this, I mean, we're going to look at some of the other tentacles now, but the real difference between them, how can I put this? Their effects all kind of fall under the same umbrella, but the subtle differences of when they take effect is what will bring you down and bring you down hard. Now, this one is when striking tentacles attacks. Okay? So, bar fainting it or trying to attack it before it attacks you, this forced effect is going to trigger.
Probably, yeah. Most probably.
Well, the forced effect will definitely trigger. Whether it does anything. And it's... So let's just quickly jump to the others, and I think that will sort of be a bit clearer what I'm getting at that one. So I just grabbed the next one here on my... I've got one available. What is this one? This is the Thrashing Tentacle. What was the other one? Striking Tentacle. Okay. So so this is a Thrashing Tentacle. This one has an engagement cost of 12. Threat of 2, hits for 3, no defense though. Huh. And 3 hit points. Okay, Thrashing Tentacle. It is a tentacle. And it has a forced effect. And it says, when Thrashing Tentacle is attacked, discard the top card of the encounter deck. If that card is dealt a shadow effect or is a tentacle enemy, deal the damage from the attack to one character an attacking player controls, ignoring defense. Now, I love the theme of this. You know, you're trying to attack a thrashing tentacle. It thrashes away.
And you end up booting your mate in the head back.
Yeah, with an axe.
I just thought of something. So it says, a character an attacking player controls. So if you're playing two-player...
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about if you've gone ranged or something like this.
I don't think you control it.
So it'll just be whoever's engaged with that.
Yeah, yeah. Whoever is actually making the attack at that time. I don't think you don't gain control of a ranged character, I don't think. Almost certainly, I don't think so. Yeah, so the difference here, of course, is that is when this one is attacked. So the major difference here is the other one is attacking you and you have no real control over that. It's going to attack you unless you can feint it. So therefore, that forced effect is going to trigger. This one, you can just choose to not attack it.
Yes.
And that's kind of what I did a lot. But then it sits there and sits there and... It attacks for 3 each round.
Yeah, there's nothing to be trifled with. I mean, it attacks for 3. You know, it's going to do something.
So let's have a quick look at the last one. Do you want to read the last one?
Okay, the last one is Grasping Tentacle. It has engagement cost of 12. It has a threat of 2, attacks for 3. Again, has no defense and 3 hit points. It's a tentacle. Force effect, when Grasping Tentacle is attacked, so similar to the Thrashing Tentacle, Discard the top card of your encounter deck. That card has shadow effect or is a tentacle enemy. Attach this card to an attacking character as a tentacle attachment. With the text, attached characters' attack and shield are reduced to zero.
Not.
I know, I'm out of practice. Thank you for correcting me. Reduced to naught. I mean, this is horrible. So basically, the grasping tentacle at this point has grasped you.
Yeah.
You can't attack or defend really, but you could die very easily. it's actually, again, great theming, I think, on this.
Yeah. So when I look at these cards in a controlled environment, I can go, oh, well, that's easy enough. I could just make sure when I'm attacking the grasping tentacle that I make sure I attack with some jump blocker as well. And therefore, if I happen to reveal a card which is a tentacle or has a shadow, it just goes on the jump blocker. It doesn't matter. In reality, I never had a jump blocker. Never. Not one. And it's like, okay, here we go. But for my money, the striking tentacle is the worst because you just can't escape it. You have to try and find a way to basically kill this thing before it gets a chance to attack you. Because otherwise, so I'm going to read this one out once again, just in case people have got confused with the many tentacles. So the striking tentacle is when it attacks. So it's when it's attacking you, you discard the card from the encounter deck. If it has a shadow effect or a tentacle, this attack is considered undefended. So it's an attack of four. It's killing heroes because it has to go onto. So an undefended attack has to go onto a hero. You only need a few of these for your entire party to be wiped out.
That's a good point. Yeah. The undefended can only go on a hero. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're right. The striking tentacles for the real beast.
I think so. I think so. You just have to take it out. You have to Gandalf this guy. You don't know where he is. He's delayed.
For the other ones, yeah, you're saying there's no sort of chump block affair, but what you need is a chump attacker.
Essentially. Yes. Yeah, basically. For the other
two. So you get your, you know, whatever, Snowborn Scout. Yeah, mm-hmm. You go and attack this tentacle with me. Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Oops.
No place for a pony. Or a fully grown horse. That sounds it. Yeah, but these are nasty. And the thing is, they keep on coming as well.
Yeah, they're nasty.
It's not like there's only a couple
plentiful.
Of these in the deck. Yeah, they're plentiful, exactly. This beast has a lot of tentacles.
It certainly does. And I'm gonna open up my notes now because, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound. I am just going to search. How can I just search this? No, that would be too easy. Oh, I've just seen reference to a particularly nasty treachery. We'll come to that in a moment.
I'm holding the treacheries in my hand right now.
Tentacles. I'm looking for tentacles. I'm looking for tentacles. And then I'm going to see if I can make any sense of the notes. Now, why have I written this? I've written Black Uryx on striking tentacle can be terrible if the discarded card forces an undefended attack. Why did I write that? Where's the Black Uryx? What do they do again? I obviously wrote it for a reason. Ah.
Uh-oh.
No, this really is terrible. I know. So, of course, all these tentacles are enemies, so they get dealt shadow cards.
Yep.
So it's not just, you know, their forced effects. So if you happen to have the Black Uryx shadow on a striking tentacle, the Black Uryx shadow states, if this attack is undefended, deal two additional shadow cards to the attacking enemy.
Oh, cripes.
Yeah. So if you have that shadow card on a striking tentacle, and then you reveal a tentacle enemy or a shadowed encounter card for the striking tentacles of force effect, it gets two more shadow cards on top of its four undefended attack.
Yeah. I guess what that means,
I mean, at that
is,
point you're dead anyway.
Yeah, that particular character is going down. Unless he or she is very lucky. I think there are some, well, in fact, speaking of treachery, there's a shadow on one of these as well, where the shadow effect is attacking enemy gets plus one attack. Not that bad.
Mm.
Plus three instead if it's a tentacle.
Perfect.
So there are some really nasty combos of shadows here. I think when you're playing this quest, what you find very quickly is you get in very quickly into this constant battle with all these tentacles, other enemies, etc. And it's very easy to get overwhelmed, isn't it? I think you're right. There's something to be said about taking things out as early as possible. You can really get drowned by the sheer number, and then these horrible effects they all have, you can get wiped out quite quickly. In fact, we'll come to the decks with you shortly, I guess.
Yeah.
Shall we just dive into those three treacheries quickly?
Yeah, let's do it. I'm just scanning. Whilst you're talking there, I was just scanning these notes to see if I could see any more things. There's one which I'm just going to read out purely for my use of language in the note that you'll appreciate. And it's basically what we were saying about the grasping tentacle, that you should just not attack it, basically. Try and find a way of killing it with direct damage. And I've written, when attacking grasping tentacle, either don't or try and kill with direct damage or attack with a random quester, even if they attack for naught.
Yes. Correct use of language, sir. My congratulations to you.
Okay, there's pages of this. I'm not gonna worry too much about it. Oh, well, this has got nothing to do with anything apart from just this is the entire notes for one game. Setup, Mountain Warg. Staging, Mountain Warg.
That's the one you were talking about earlier. Board flipped.
Oh, I've also got a note from when we played together. Two-player games. We won 2-2. Can't remember how we did it.
Was that from when we played in the summer?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. No, we got through fairly swiftly, didn't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, but I have no notes on it because we were enjoying ourselves.
I did make a note of my deck, actually, that I used for that. But that was obviously the two-player flavour. All right, so we talked about the new enemies, which are all tentacles. There are some locations and some treacheries as well. Shall we discuss treacheries very quickly?
Sure. I've got one that I need to focus on.
Go on. Well, I think it's going to be this one, yeah.
It's going to be wrapped.
Yep.
Okay, it is a tentacle treachery. Now, I would, straight off the bat, say that even though this has the type, we incorrectly use the word type, it has the trait of a tentacle, this does not count towards any of the tentacle enemy's force effects, because the tentacle enemies state that when you reveal a card, it has to have a shadow effect or be a tentacle enemy, and this is a tentacle treachery.
Very easy mistake to make, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably one I've made.
Almost certainly. So a wonderful artwork, by the way, of what appears to be a hobbit all wrapped up in a tentacle being dragged underwater.
Eesh.
Eesh.
Not having a good time there.
No. So it is a tentacle treachery, and it states this. When revealed, the first player... Ah, this is interesting for a two-player. The first player attaches wrapped to a hero he controls. Counts as a tentacle attachment with the text. Limit one per hero. Attached hero cannot exhaust or ready. At the end of the round, discard the attached hero from play.
Mm.
Combat action. Exhaust a hero you control without a tentacle attachment to discard wrapped. Okay. So, it's basically, if you get one of these on one of your heroes, you absolutely need to have another hero ready or find a way of readying another hero who doesn't have a tentacle attachment, because otherwise there's just no escape. That you're going to lose that hero. You're going to be dragged into the depths.
Absolutely. I love the theming of this.
Yeah.
Because it's a combat action as well. Makes it even better. So this obviously will get revealed during staging. So during combat, you've got to make a choice. Am I going to fight and try and defend or try and attack, whatever? Or I've just got, in fact, I've got to sacrifice any attack I'm making, just save my friend because he's about to get chomped by this horrific creature. And I think, yeah, that's really, again, really, really smart theming, I think.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And yeah, but a really nasty, nasty card. Because they're taking out two of your heroes in one go. And if you can't do anything about it, it's literally taking out your hero from the whole game. So yeah, you're right. You've got to get rid of that straight away.
One time, I'm just again scanning my notes here, I revealed two wrapped during the initial setup. because you're revealing
neither of them got any threat.
So you reveal one and you go, well, that just goes onto a hero straight away. Second one onto the second hero. And let's see if I wrote what I tried to do here to try and get past this. I mean, you know me, I will try and play these things out.
You have to try and ready your... Well, actually, so what it says is attach hero cannot exhaust already. It says at the end of the round, discard attach hero from play. So you can't use, if you save the hero, that hero then can't save another one from wrapped in the same round. You have to wait till the end of the round to discard this.
Say it one more time.
So it says attached hero cannot exhaust already.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's say he's ready. Mm-hmm. He's got this on him.
Yeah.
He can't exhaust already.
Yeah.
At the end of the round, discard attached hero from play.
Okay? Yeah.
Combat action.
Yeah.
Exhaust a hero you control without a tentacle attachment to discard wrapped.
Yeah. No. So that's what I thought.
Oh, maybe you can actually.
That's what I thought. Yeah. Then. No, you're talking out of your hat. So
Yeah. Yes. No, you're right. Because that's at the end of the round is when the hero gets.
Exactly. So what you can do is.
Yeah, okay. So you can do that actually.
This is what I attempted to do.
You can save a hero. And that hero can save the other hero.
Yeah, exactly. During combat, as long as you've got one hero still ready. So this is what happened. I basically had... who did I have? I had Gimli, Eowyn, and Boromir, looking back here. And I revealed two wraps. So one went on Gimli, one went on Eowyn. So then I could... Because Boromir can ready himself... Oh, hang on.
What was that?
It's the air horn of Gondor.
Oh, God. How many weeks have you been waiting to do the air horn of Gondor? Who's running the sound system in Middle Earth, do you reckon? Oh, deep dub. Oh, it might be the Ents. Those slow, deep beats, big booming bass. Then the air horn of Gondor. Oh, Gandalf will be well into it.
Oh, that has tickled me way more than I was expecting.
Gandalf and the hobbits on a long bottom leaf, just nodding their heads real slow.
Oh, that has pleased me greatly.
I'm glad to hear it. How you feeling? Oh, I'm wrapped, man. I'm wrapped.
So the intention was... So one went on Gimli, one went on Eowyn, and then because Boromir can ready himself.
Oh, of course.
By raising your threat.
Yeah.
So then I was just going to... Because if you don't have the ability to ready, you're absolutely... you're up the Anduin without a paddle. Because because you can't quest...
Have we never made that pun before? I'm quite disappointed in both of us. Yeah, yeah, dude, it's true.
Because you can't quest. You can't do anything that involves exhausting, basically. So you have to make it to the combat phase. So the idea being that if I had Boromir, I could quest with him. Then I can, you know, raise my threat by one to ready him. And then when I get to the combat phase, I can exhaust Boromir again, take one rapt off of one of them, and then either do the Boromir trick again, but I probably want to keep him for fighting, to be honest, and probably just use the now unwrapped hero to unwrap the second hero.
And the unwrapped one can actually still fight. If you do it at the beginning of, if you use the window at the beginning of the combat phase.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, cool, okay.
Yeah, because I also had this with Elrond's sons. I've Eladan and Elro here. And because they can, I can't remember. When they defend, they can ready themselves by spending resources. I can't remember. Something.
They help each other out, don't they?
They do. They buff each other.
Carry on.
And when they're not busy doing that, they also have another ability to ready, but I can't remember how they ready. I think they have to spend resources.
Mm. Yeah, something. Yeah, we'll have to
play the game.
Play the game, yeah. All right, well, that's wrapped. Nasty business. And I think the advice is, yeah, get rid of it.
You have to get rid of it.
Like, otherwise.
You've got to get... Yeah, have ways of readying your heroes so that you can still use them and have them ready to help out your other heroes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, talking about... Oh, okay. This is random. That's unlike us. Talking about readying heroes, I happened to be listening back to an episode, I don't know how long ago. Maybe one of our listeners has heard this and gone, that's not right. But I thought I'd better bring this up in case, because it is some inadvertent cheating on your behalf. You'll be shocked to hear.
Me? Can't believe it. I thought,
if this comes up, I'll mention it so that you don't continue to do so, because I can imagine this might happen. I can't remember what quest it was. It was literally years ago. But you mentioned
that last episode.
Yeah. You mentioned using Ever Vigilant to ready a hero. And actually I said, I don't think that's that. I actually, not to blow my own horn.
Man, a little bit of power.
But not to blow my own horn, I did say, I don't think actually that's the right use of it. But not, I didn't actually pick you up on the inadvertent cheating. It was just, I didn't think it was worth a space in your deck, but you said you didn't care. Sounds so far so familiar.
That sounds very me.
Yeah, exactly. But you were using Ever Vigilant to ready heroes, but actually you can't do that. Ever Vigilant only readies allies.
It says on the card, Ever Vigilant, cost one, action, choose and ready one ally card.
Yes.
Yep. Pretty clear.
Yeah. If you read it.
Yeah. Pretty quite clear. But I consider heroes my allies. No, good point. No. To be honest, yeah, I think that's a card where for a little while I did use a fair bit, and I kind of stopped. I can't remember the last time I put that in the deck, frankly. But no, good to know. That's kind of a mistake I wouldn't make now, but I could absolutely have made when you're first starting to.
Yeah.
But then again, it goes back to that thing I said right way at the beginning of the whole thing. Always read the card every single time.
Yeah.
Because if you make a simple mistake like that, it just lodges in your head and you never really look at it. Oh, I know that's a card that readies anybody.
Yeah.
And it kind of, you can just miss it, right? So yeah, always, so yeah, that's following, trying to follow my own advice there. Always read the card every single time you use it.
Yeah.
It's a good practice, I think, especially when you're first playing. But good. Thanks for pointing out yet another piece of, you know, we got the FAQ, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
We should probably have a list of inadvertent cheatings.
Wow.
Because that's, it'd probably be quite a useful thing for new players, right? The idiot's guide, people like me, the idiot's guide to Lord of the Rings, a card game. Right, everything's very clear. It's all written down. Here's how you're going to misunderstand it because you're a bit of a dunce like me.
Right? Well, actually, you're not wrong because, well, the number of facts that we've read and then had to go, what do they mean?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, obviously, I'm being a little bit maybe over self-deprecating. Yeah, but there are some, yeah, fairly, you know, if our friend Jeremy in the testing team can't get it, then, you know, there's a big chance that we can't either. All right.
Okay, where were
Let's move on.
So we were wrapped.
I'm going to read out the next treachery. Disturbed Waters, Doomed 5. All right, that's that one. It's so simple, this one. It's actually got some... It's got a guy who looks a bit Aragorn-y, who's... It's quite cool artwork, actually, because... He's just above the water and the shot is from below the water and he's disturbed the water. That's not a very Aragorn thing to do. He would stop somebody from doing it. In fact, he does in the film, doesn't he? Anyway, Doom 5, and then there's a little quote from the Fellowship of the Ring, which I won't read out. Sounds innocuous, but it ain't, because your threat also will be rising fairly quickly throughout this quest also. And you'll probably start, if you've got quite a fighty deck, you'll probably, as I have, you're probably starting off without a low, you know, it's not a low threat to start with. So Doom 5 can be pretty nasty.
I just quickly searched my notes for Doomed 5 just to see you know, when it came up. This note says third game, so we're probably talking May last year. Again, I've got lots of notes about when things went horribly wrong during initial staging.
The best one.
So initial staging, first card revealed, Disturbed Waters, Doomed 5, but no threat, so I have to keep on revealing cards.
Lovely.
Second card, Wrapped.
Nice.
Okay, so that went on a hero.
Just give me a location.
Yeah. Well, I got a location, so we'll talk about it in a second. Makeshift Path. Okay, we'll talk about that in a second. But for now, just know it only has one threat. So it means I'm still revealing cards. Next card. I haven't started playing yet, by the way. Next card, Mountain Warg.
Of course. Of course.
Round one staging. So really, I still haven't started playing. I've just committed some people to quest. Disturbed Water.
So you're nearly dead anyway.
Yeah, so that's plus 10 I've got so far before I've done anything. Yeah, all it says then is round two staging, Warg's Lair, and then I stopped taking notes.
It's a makeshift passage, by the way, not makeshift path, I think you said.
I'm only going by my notes, not the cards.
Yeah, exactly. So you only make conversation errors, it's fine for you. Whereas I make proper game errors.
Yeah, so, yeah, Disturbed Waters, Doom 5.
Nasty.
Mm.
Simple, but nasty. That just leaves one treachery. Do you want to read that one out?
I will have to find
it. It's got a delightful name.
But, oh, found it. I've got it. Ill Purpose.
Ill Purpose. Nice.
That's wonderful.
It's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, what are we looking at here? Oh, it's a leg.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a wrapped leg. It's not quite wrapped.
It's getting there.
It's on its way.
Yeah.
And a sort of a ghostly hand as well.
This is a horrible card.
Okay.
Oh, yes. Yeah, a ghostly hand. He's trying desperately to cling onto the bank.
Yeah.
Eesh.
He's like, any minute now, I'm going to be wrapped. That's what he's thinking. Okay. Ill Purpose. Treachery. When revealed. Oh, goodness. All enemies in the staging area engage the player with the highest threat. Then, each player raises their threat by the total threat of all cards in the staging area.
So if you've got locations and stuff in there, they're all going to get whacked onto your threat. That is, if you're trying to control the game, this can be an absolute killer from what I remember. It's a horrible, horrible card.
Well, that you really hit the nail on the head there. If you're trying to control the game, this is one of the quests which I have felt so out of control in every time I've played it. It's not like I go, oh, okay, I can just sort of balance this, balance that. It's like, no, you get a couple of tentacles out, you get something like this, and then all your plans are out the window, which is brilliant theming, by the way, because it really is a fight for your life.
It's manic.
And there's tentacles coming at you.
Yeah, it's chaos. Like, where did these guys come from? Suddenly the warg is over here, some black rooks or whatever. It's like, get out of here.
it's pretty unpleasant. There is a shadow effect on ill purpose as well. Attacking enemy gets +1 attack, pretty standard. +3 attack if it is a tentacle.
Yeah, that's what I mentioned earlier. It's like, it's if you get something bad as a shadow on striking tentacle or whatever, even if it's a hero, well defended, you're likely to be going down. Or at best on the verge of death.
Did you say well defended or undefended?
Well defended. Even a well defended hero.
Yeah, but well defended, you might be all right. But unfortunately, it's on striking tentacles, so there's a high chance it's going to be an undefended attack.
Okay, then. Doesn't matter about your defense.
No. Forget it.
It's a nasty business, John. It's a nasty business. And it's no place for a pony.
No. No, I'm beginning to believe that Aragorn was correct with this statement.
Yeah, I think he's smart guy. Right, so that's all the treacheries and the enemies. We do have a couple of locations. Is it worth holding for? Do we want to see what happens on the next quest card, or should we just have a quick look at these locations first?
Let's location it.
Let's location it. All right. Let's start with Makeshift Passage.
Okay.
Makeshift Passage. I always thought that could be like a working title for Twin Peaks or something, you know, before they named it. Makeshift Passage.
Dempsey and Makeshift Passage.
Dempsey and Makeshift. That's okay. What a shame. Right, there's some cool artwork on these locations. They're all sort of murky, and I think three of them are swamps and one is something else. But so this one is a swamp. Makeshift Passage has one threat. Takes you 5 progress to get through. Has an effect forced. After you travel to Makeshift Passage, place 2 progress tokens on the current quest card, bypassing any active location. So that can actually be quite useful.
Sounds all right.
Yeah.
Sounds nice.
But then it takes you 5 to get through here, though. So that's the thing to bear in mind. And it's only one threat. So this one, if you're on the verge of getting over the card, or we'll look at the last card shortly, can actually be a fairly useful one to explore. So, so this one actually can be handy just to, if you can deal with for one threat there, just handy to hang around in the staging area for a rainy day when you really need it. Because it's a makeshift passage, it can save you.
Yeah, I think that's what it's going for. It's like it wasn't the way you were gonna go.
Yeah,
but let's get through here.
Yeah, and it very much aligns with that whole sort of chaotic theme to the quest we were talking about. So yeah, cool card that.
Yeah, it is. I don't know if I saw it that often, to be honest.
No,
I mean I saw it in that third game where I drew it in staging. Yes. I only had one threat.
Perfect.
Exactly the time I didn't need to see it.
Yep, of course.
Okay, I will grab. What have we got here? Sometimes I'm looking at these cards like it's the first time I've seen them. I have looked at them over the past year, but it still has been a while.
Same here. So go on. Pick one.
Okay, well, I've got a simple one here. It's a unique location, and it's Stair Falls, and it has a threat of 2. It is of type Stair. It has 4 progress to get past it, and it has a travel effect. It says the first player must exhaust 2 characters to travel here. Now, this wouldn't be too bad at all if you had a lot of allies out, of course. You know, but I can't stress the number of times. I don't know I put like about three or four different decks together to see how this quest played with different play styles. I don't think at any point I had many allies on the table. They would come out, they would get tentacled away.
Yeah.
and just be gone.
That would be the end of that.
And that would be the end of that, exactly.
Yeah, I think it might... Well, we'll talk about our decks very shortly. I mean, yeah, I think I have used this a couple of times, generally just to get it out of the staging area. But yes, you do need to have plenty of allies out, of course. One thing I would say is that of all the things that we've seen this deck, it actually looks fairly pleasant.
I wouldn't mind going there.
Therefore, it's quite nice. A little bit solemn, maybe, but kind of chilled out.
I mean, it looks like it's sunrise or sunset.
Yeah. That's probably the middle of the day down there.
Yeah. Red sky at night, watcher's delight.
Watcher's delight. It's like angel's delight. Like a really horrible dessert. The little tentacles come out. All right. We've got two more to go. One I've picked up is called Stagnant Creek. You.
What was the name of our first episode? Because this is
something
kind of,
bog.
Yeah.
A filthy bog. A smelly bog. Something like that. Treacherous bog.
Treacherous bog?
Something like that, wasn't it? Nasty bog. Something bog.
There's no... Yeah. Perilous.
Perilous bog. A dangerous bog. I can't remember.
Festering bog.
A festering bog. Festering bog.
Yeah.
A festering bog. You call it festering bog. This is a stagnant creek. It has a threat of three. It's called Stagnant Creek. You really need three to get through it. It's a type of swamp. When revealed, discard the top card of the encounter deck. If the discarded card is a tentacle enemy, add that card to the staging area and raise each player's threat by five.
Oh, my goodness.
Disgusting. It's got a threat of three. So this is how nasty this game is. It's like even these seemingly not too bad locations, considering you're probably not going to be having a massive amount of questing power, probably, depending on your deck, but we can discuss that. Even when you get through it, suddenly you're probably going to be fighting a hell of a lot more as well.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah. Horrible, horrible stuff.
Yeah, and there are so many tentacle enemies.
So many.
So it should actually say when the discarded card is a tentacle enemy.
Which is bound to be a tentacle enemy.
Oh, that is horrible. That is horrible.
Yeah, nasty. So just one more location, I think.
Just one more location. I got it here. It is a festering bog.
Well, it kind of is, actually.
Yeah, exactly. This is what triggered me. So, no, it is a perilous swamp. Threat of four and takes two progress to get through it. It is a swamp. And this is just a constant effect. It says, no more than one progress token can be placed on perilous swamp each round. Okay, so... What does that mean? Well, we know what it means, but what does that mean in reality? So it has two progress to get through it, which means that no matter how much you're questing, you can only ever quest for one, basically, if this is your active location.
Yeah. And great theming again.
Yeah, you're stuck in the swamp, man.
Because you're in a swamp, you know? You're trying to wade through this horrible, boggy
terrain.
Tentacles
coming at you.
Yeah, nasty place. Perilous. In fact, I'd say. But it has got a threat of four, so you want to be getting that out.
You've got to get, you've got to go through the swamp.
Yeah. Very smartly put together, this game, this quest.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, as much as I said earlier that I never want to see this quest again, it is not because I think it is a bad quest. I am just sick of it. it does have a shadow effect as well. It removes one progress token from the current quest.
Annoying.
Because you're in a swamp.
So let's move on from your seething feelings about this quest to card 2A.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the Seething Lake. Now, on the front, so all it says here, so it's got a little quote from Lord of the Rings.
Oh, I'm just going to jump it. Sorry, I'm just going to interrupt you immediately. So all of this is going on, and meanwhile, we still have to quest 13.
13, yeah.
13 progress to get off that first card.
Yep.
It is not unusual to not get past this first card.
Yes. I think that is our experience. Yeah, and we can talk about our decks very shortly. Let's just talk about the second card and the two that we set aside as well. So we have... So card 2A is the Seething Lake. And it says on the front there, it's a little quote from Lord of the Rings, says, "The other swung round and saw the waters of the lake seething as if a host of snakes were swimming up from the southern end." Yeesh. It says, "The doors of Durin are blocked by an ancient spell. You must figure out a way into the mines before the seething bog and its watcher consumes you all." We flip it over. This one you only need 5 to get through. When revealed, add the watcher to the staging area. Doors of Durin becomes the active location, moving any previous active location to the staging area. So it doesn't discard, it goes back to staging. Shuffle all tentacle cards in the encounter discard pile back into the encounter deck. Well, thank you so much. And then it says, importantly, if the players have at least 3 victory points and defeat this stage, they have won the game. So you've got to get through for 5 on here and get 3 victory points as well. And the only cards with 3 victory points are the two which are just coming into play.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah, the Doors of Durin and the Watcher.
Okay. Which one should we start with?
Oh.
Start with a Watcher?
Sure. Let's go for the Watcher.
Okay. Do you want to do the honors?
I will. But first of all, now I don't say this very often because one of the things I think we both really, really love about this game is the quality of the artwork. This is one card I've never really got on with.
It's a bit froggy.
It's a little bit froggy.
Well, I don't like frogs. I've never been a fan. So I'd be terrified.
Moving on. So this is the Watcher, which is going to enter the staging area as soon as we get to stage 2B. He has a threat of 48.
Safe. He can stay there.
I think we'll be all right.
Let him rot.
He doesn't have a threat of 48.
An engagement cost.
He has an engagement cost of 48. So he's staying in the staging area. He has a threat of 4. So that's 4 threat in the staging area. He hits for 5.
Ouch.
Ouch. Defends for 7 and has 9 hit points. So not that bad a number of hit points for a big bad enemy. We've seen worse, but a defense of 7 is unbelievably painful.
Disgusting.
So he is, I say he, it. It is a creature and a tentacle. Regenerate 2. So let's go back to your... To your insert sheet there. So as we mentioned, at the end of each round, basically, any damage on the Watcher, you'll take 2 of those damage tokens off of him again. So this guy is difficult to kill.
Yep.
While there is another tentacle enemy in play, not just engaged with you, in play. So it could be engaged with you, engaged with your playing partner, or just in the staging area. Whilst there is another tentacle enemy in play, the Watcher cannot be optionally engaged. That could be troublesome, seeing as an engagement cost of 48. If the Watcher is in the staging area at the end of the combat phase, each player must deal 3 damage to 1 character he controls.
Yeah, so either putting your heroes on the brink of death or killing off probably allies.
Yeah.
At this point.
Pretty much. Okay, there's quite a lot to unpack there. But, you know, in summary, it's a nasty bit of work. So it's...
It's horrible. Or it's horrible.
This is proper old school boss fight now. So yeah. Not only are you going to have to deal with the tentacles, you're going to have to deal with the big guy himself. And you can't engage this guy unless you've got rid of all the tentacles. So you've got to hack down the tentacles first, then you can optionally engage. Because the only other way of, well, apart from direct damage, of course, with Gandalfing him, or a hail of stones, very, very lightly, you'd have to have your threat at 48, which means you'd probably have one round to try and kill him. And you'd also be dealing with tentacles in that scenario. So yeah. You'd have to kill all the tentacles, optionally engage him, and then you have to pile on the damage because he is going to damage you and you have got an awful lot of defense to get past. And at the end of each round, any damage you've done on him, two of that's coming off. Does have three victory points though. So you defeat him and get through that final quest card, a well-deserved win of the game.
So that's one way to do it. Easy as that. Just kill this guy and get your five quests in. You're done.
Yeah.
So what's the other way? So the other card is the Doors of Durin, which is a location, which obviously becomes the active location as per the instructions. It has a threat of two, and it is a gate. Not a door, apparently. It's a gate.
No.
And it says, progress tokens that would be placed on Doors of Durin are instead placed on the current quest card. So when normally it has the number of progress tokens you need to get through it there. It's just got a dash. Action. Each player may discard any number of cards from his hand. Then discard the top card of the encounter deck. If the first letter of the encounter card's title matches that of one of your discarded player cards, add Doors of Durin to your victory display, limit once per round. Victory points 3. So what that's saying is basically you're figuring out the riddle on the door. So there's two ways out of this. You kill the Watcher,
Melon.
Everyone's happy. Melon. Speak, friend, and enter. And you know what? In the film, it's Frodo who figures out it's a riddle. He goes, it's a riddle. Right?
Yeah. I think it's Sam in the book.
No, in the book, from memory, I think it's Merry.
Oh, Merry, is it? Okay.
Because he was like the smartest. So, well, obviously, we talked previously before about some of the changes they made between the book and the film, and usually for really good reason, you know. But I never quite understood that one, like why it couldn't be Merry. I guess he was too busy messing around chucking stones in the disturbing water with Pippin. But
yeah.
Because in the book, he's probably the smartest one, isn't he, Merry? Like he seems the most grown up, at least, I'd say, out of the four of them at the beginning.
I wonder if they did it, like you say, purely for filmic narrative reasons. It's just like, okay, we really have to structure that Frodo is the main hobbit. Sam is his sidekick during Fellowship. We all know that Sam is the true hero of the entire piece. spoilers. and then you have... And in the Fellowship, the film I'm talking, Merry and Pippin really are just part of the Fellowship. They really haven't become their own characters, I don't think, at that stage. I mean, I think in the book they're already much more fleshed out.
Maybe so.
And I think it would perhaps be a little strange but maybe not. I mean, because actually Pippin starts to have his character fleshed out during the Mines of Moria scene. You know, they're disturbing the water. He's the one who knocks the armor into the well.
That's one of the funniest bits. I love the way it's like the gap between the sounds. Yeah. And each one he just goes, what's Gandalf's line? He's a great line afterwards. Fool of a Took, he says.
Yeah, fool of a Took. Next time, throw yourself in and save us all the bother. <That's it. laughs>
And he slams the book shut as he says it. That's a great line. He has some good lines. So the two ways out are, so you can basically kill the Watcher, or you can escape from him by figuring out the riddle and getting through the door and closing it behind you.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Really is that easy.
So I don't think I've ever done this by doing the doors way. I think I've always killed the Watcher.
Right.
But I'll say that.
Yeah. Well, okay.
When we played together,
yeah,
we killed the Watcher.
Yeah, twice.
Both times. Yeah, and we actually got through this quest fairly straight, not easily, but it wasn't that difficult to player at all, actually.
No. And one
player, much bigger challenge.
Yeah, I think, again, this is sort of, we're very much jumping around our, I was going to say regular structures, not that regular, but I think in two player, this becomes a much, well, from our experience, a much simpler task to achieve. Now, you said in the insert, I think you said it was a difficulty level 5.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think
one player, it's like,
yeah, one player, it's
8 or 9,
Surely. Yeah. But I would say for two player, I think 5 is about right. It really, yeah, really didn't really cause us so much grief.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
So this is, if you are a solo player and you're being frustrated by this quest, I think this is potentially one to bring out the old double decker.
Yeah. Double fisted, two fisted, whatever it was. Double decker. We went with double decker.
Yeah.
Yeah. So funny enough, so when I played this in, well, just before we recorded that bonus episode.
Yeah.
For some reason, I didn't, so what happened was when I played this one player, I was going through this cycle, and you know, I'm like, I quite like spirit and all of that, as I did back then anyway. Mm. And it's like, okay, I'm going to have to make a fighty deck for this. And then I'd forgotten about this deck. So when I played it before, before we did that bonus episode, I put together a sort of a new deck and it didn't really work. And then I stumbled across, I thought, well, why don't you just look up the, so just in research for this episode, I thought, well, why don't you look up the deck you actually use for it? And so my deck was called What's That Floating in the Water? which is, I say there's a Pixies link earlier. That's actually a line from a Pixie song called Mr. Grief. So let's come full circle on that one.
Now, we don't just throw this show together.
No, it's all evidently. And my hero, so I had a starting threat of 32, and my heroes were Aragorn, Gimli, and Tharlin.
Old school.
And do you have any cards?
Original Aragorn.
Original Aragorn. So Aragorn will, you can ready him after he commits to the quest. So it's a way to get some questing and fight. He's quite a good fighter as well.
Yeah.
Gimli, obviously, you can beef up and make an amazing fighter. So when you want to take out some of these harder enemies, and especially that horrible Watcher at the end, kind of a beefed up Gimli can be very useful. And Tharlin, when he commits to a quest, you can deal 1 damage to an enemy as it comes out. So trying to get as much damage on these guys as possible. So, and what I had in my deck to spot, I won't go through, obviously, through everything, but, well, in fact, guess how many cards are in this deck?
Is it one of your upper echelons? Or is this
no.
more? This, oh, okay. So, well, it's not going to be 50. Let's go with 55.
Not bad. 52 cards.
52. I was going to go for 52.
An actual deck of cards. Which is very rare for me. So obviously, I think remembering back to this, I think I had tried a couple of things and thought, actually, make it more focused. And I'd written a note in the description that this worked the first time, and which might have been a complete fluke. What I've got in there is, so I've got like 3 Gandalfs and a Faramir, but then what I did was bought a whole bunch of cheapo allies, right? So 3 Gondorian spearmen.
Yeah, bless
it. Don't forget, if they're defending, you stick 1 damage on. So him and Tharlin together, you've got 2 out of 3 damage for those tentacles already just by doing that. We love the Gondorian spear, you especially, your old buddy.
Big fan.
Then the rarely seen Guard of the Citadel.
Oh, my word.
Yeah. So this is all about chumping, you know. So it only costs 2, this ally. He hits for 1. He can quest for 1. No shield, even though he's wearing full armor. And
it's made of paper.
Yeah. Just painted silver on him.
It's getting really
on his bare
wet
chest.
Shouldn't have worn my paper armor. Real mistake.
And then I got like a hat trick of Snowborn Scouts. So I've got some real chumps in here.
Yeah.
And 3 veteran axe hands who can actually be really useful actually for just beefing up your attacks and stuff. So they were the allies. And then for things like attachments and so I've got things like Citadel Plate, Boots of Erebor for Gimli and Thardin just to beef them up a bit in defense. And Dwarad of Axe, you know, this kind of stuff. Steward of Gondor, of course, as you need. One thing that was, if I remember correctly, was really useful was the sword that was broken.
Ah, yes.
Right, so this one is an attachment that costs 3. And you actually get it in the pack for Watcher in the Water.
Mm.
Right, so we probably haven't even discussed this one yet. I can't remember if we've done leadership for this. Well, maybe we have.
But, I think we might have.
Oh, I think we have, actually, yeah. So it says, attached to a hero. Attached hero gets a leadership resource icon. If attached hero is Aragorn, each character you control gets +1 questing.
Ah, yes.
So that's really useful. So that was a way to make sure that you can still quest a bit and still fight as well, essentially. I had like a Song of Kings in there just to share the resource around and things like Dúnedain Warning to add shield. So it's all really around beefing people up, but also making sure to be able to quest. And then I think I went for some Berserker stuff as well, like Durin Song. Choose a dwarf hero, that hero gets +2 on everything till the end of the round. So if you have to desperately defend or you're going for that big kill on a big enemy or something, you can use that. And same thing with Khazad-Khazad. Choose a dwarf character until the end of the phase, that character gets +3 attack.
Yeah, Khazad-Khazad's amazing, yeah.
Yeah. And then I've got things like feints, sneak attack, swift strike, stuff like this. And lastly, I had 3 Lure of Moria's, and that costs 3, and it's an event, and the action is ready all dwarf characters. So I think it's quite obvious what the tactic was here, or the strategy was here.
Yeah.
Be strong on attacking, make sure you can still get away with some questing as well with various things, and then the rest of it is really based on beefing up. So have a bunch of chumps. Beef up your hero as much as you can, and then a few kind of like kamikaze cards where people go mental so you can really take out the big guys. And that seems to work. So I haven't tried this one again. I think I probably, before we play next, I probably will try this just one more time just for old time's sake. If it works again, great. If it probably won't, then I'll just leave it and move on to the next quest. But that was essentially how I did it. I think you said your one was you had Eowyn in there and Boromir.
Yeah, I tried a few decks actually. My initial one, I think I just picked up the deck that I'd used in the previous quest, which had Elrond and Elrohan. And then, and actually, I kind of wish I'd maybe stuck a bit more with them because when you're talking then about all the leadership cards, they all sound very useful, especially like some of these cheap allies as well. And I was also struggling a lot with resource. And as soon as I ditched that deck, I didn't go back to leadership. So no more Steward of Gondor. Mm-hmm. I will talk about the deck, which I ended up sticking with. I do want to talk about how you can potentially defeat this game without defeating the Watcher. And I tried so many times, so many times. But I think my theory is sound. Okay, we'll come to that in a minute. Let's talk about a Battle Hardy deck, which at the moment, that's the one I played with the most. So the deck I used the most was our friend Gimli. I think for all the reasons that you said, I mean, if you get a Citadel Plate on him, you beef him up, he's going to be your best hope of killing the Watcher. And then I had Boromir
you're never gonna get bored.
No, I'm never gonna get tired of that ever. Which he is so good because he's such a powerful attacker and defender, and he can ready himself, you know, with obviously your threats going up, but let's face it, you've got to get through this as quick as possible anyway, and all these tentacle enemies have low engagement costs, so your threat being high is kind of irrelevant. Mm. There's no sneaking around in this quest. So not only is Boromir good for getting multiple uses, he's a great defender, he's a great attacker, and on several occasions, I pulled off the bomb.
Yay! Of course, you'd love the Boromir bomb.
Yeah, but come on, let's say you've got 4 or 5 tentacles attacking you.
Yeah.
You just got to go. You've got to do it. You got to do it.
And it's got that's what he's kind of made for, isn't it?
Yeah, Boromir, it's for these moments, and you don't pull off the Boromir bomb lightly.
It's a heavy bomb.
It's a heavy bomb. I mean, it's yeah. I'm gonna have a quick scan through. I mean, I've played this deck enough to know. Oh, and my other hero was Eowyn, because I was finding that even though I had all this attacking abilities, you still need to get through that 13 progress.
That's really the killer. You can make, if you just make a pure sort of fighty deck, you just end up getting fretting out because you're not getting anywhere.
Exactly. So you still have to try and get through it. So let me just go through and see if anything jumps out. I did also, as best as possible, make it sort of as dwarf heavy as possible, not necessarily to do with the theming, but more that they are quite useful in this scenario. There's an awful lot that you can beef up your dwarves and get some good attacks going on it. Did we talk about Boffa yet?
I think we did, yes.
Okay, because Boffa's an interesting one.
Boffa and Biffa.
Yeah, this is Boffa. So Boffa is a spirit ally. Did we talk about him? Well, we'll talk about him now anyway. So
he's great.
He costs 3. He quests for 2, so he's going to give you a bit of questing. He hits for 1, but you know we all know that dwarves can increase their hitting power, no problem. He defends for 1, and he has 3 hit points, so he will survive. Not against most tentacles, but in general, he will survive. But this is where he's interesting. So quest action. You spend 1 spirit resource to put Boffa into play from your hand, exhausted and committed to a quest. If you quest successfully this phase and Boffa is still in play, return him to your hand. So because I was struggling with resources, I was actually sort of using that to get him in cheaply. So the thing about the timing of this action, it's a quest action, but you can do it after you know what you're going to quest for. So you can already work out, am I going to get through this? And if you know you're not...
Exactly.
And importantly, that 2 more...
Will get you through.
Or will not get you through, rather. But it will therefore only put your threat up a little bit. You can bring Boffa in exhausted for a cost of 1, which is a discount of 2, and then he stays there.
Yep. Yeah, you know, so he gets readied at the end of a round.
Yeah, and then you've got yourself another cheap ally. I mean, of course, it's also handy for pushing through a quest. You know, using him the way he's meant to. You can just bring him in. Well, I say meant to. It's up to you how you decide to use him. But you can bring him in for a cost of 1. He gives you 2 willpower, and then back to your hand to do the same process again the next round. Super useful ally. Now, in this deck, because I did have a spirit, I was able to bring in quite a few Rohan characters, and that's not just the Rohan, like the big guns, but also like the horses and things. But even though the mine is no place for a pony, and the idea of that is to be able to play things like Ride to Ruin, where you can discard a Rohan ally to choose a location to put 3 progress on it. That's just handy just to clear out some of these big progress heavy locations that are in there. I mean, I talk about this like it really worked. It really didn't.
The idea is sound.
Yeah, the idea is sound. I've got, obviously, having spirit again gave me the ability to cancel when revealed effects. Didn't really do me any good.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, how normally in quests that's really useful, but it's not. For this particular quest, it's...
There are
a couple of things.
For Wrapped, you know, you can stop Wrapped.
Yeah, you can stop Wrapped, yeah.
That's good. And I had Unexpected Courage, which again, to have more readying ability to combat all these things. Quick Strike in Tactics allows you to basically perform an immediate attack on an enemy that's engaged with you. So if you are up against those tentacles, which do their nasty business when they attack you, you can get in there first. The only problem is that doesn't stop the tentacle that has the forced effect when it is attacked, because because you're still attacking it.
I was using Swift Strike a fair bit. If I was, that's in my, I've got three of those in my deck.
Is that the direct damage one?
Yeah, so that's, you deal 2 damage to an attacking enemy, but costs you 2. But the cool thing with that is if you've got Tharlin,
yes,
he's going to bop him for 1, and then this guy will take him out with a Swift Strike. You can take out a tentacle because they've got 3.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's quick good. Strikes, Swift Strike, all of that kind of stuff is super useful, I think, in this quest.
Okay, so I also have... So there's a couple of things. Before I get on to the Jaws of Durin attempt, I just want to... There's a couple of things which are worth mentioning for sort of tactics. Not tactics sphere, but tactics in general. So the Watcher has the effect that if he's in the staging area at the end of the combat phase, each player must deal 3 damage to a character he controls. What you can do is you can sneak attack Gandalf in, and then you can put some damage on the Watcher if you want to, or you can do whatever you want to do with Gandalf when you sneak him in. You can then damage Gandalf for 3. And then when Gandalf goes back to your hand, because it's a sneak attack, the damage is gone.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice, I like that.
That's a good one, eh?
So Gandalf's so useful.
Yeah, and well, sneak attack Gandalf, a simple combo, which is in the core set, is still one of the...
go-to
tactics. In fact, I think in one of the very few times I defeated this... this quest solo, I did it pretty much with Gandalf. So I was engaged with the Watcher. I snuck in Gandalf. That's 4 damage on him. So then I still had a tentacle in play, I think. So I couldn't engage the Watcher, but the tentacle attacked Gandalf. And then I did the sneak attack, which I just discussed. That's another 4 damage. And then the following round, I actually played Gandalf for 4 more damage. And then I used one of your favourites, the Hail of Stones, to add the last damage I required.
It's great. Hail of Stones is on my sideboard, I've noticed, on Rings TV. I don't often use a sideboard. I noticed that.
And then I just made a little note here that, and then I quested everyone, including Gandalf, and powered through with ease. The last was like, easy as pie.
Yeah, I think direct damage through Gandalf or other means on the Watcher is definitely a decent strategy.
Yeah. But unfortunately, he never quite showed up when I wanted him. Okay, so just quickly, I mean, I have pages and pages and pages of devastating defeats. I'm not going to worry about that. But I had this plan that it must be possible to get through the doors of Durin. So just to recap, you can discard X number of cards from your hand. How many is it specifically?
It says any number.
Any number. Any number. So you can discard any number of cards from your hand, and then you reveal the top card of the encounter deck. And if the first letter of that card you reveal matches the first letter of one of the cards that you've discarded, you open the door to Durin.
Yeah.
Hurrah. Then you just need to quest for 5, and then you complete the game. So, one of my all-time favourite cards, I mention it every episode, Shadow of the Past. So, this is a 2-cost neutral event, and it has the action, you move the top card of the encounter discard pile back to the top of the encounter deck. So, my plan, quite simply,
very good.
Play the game with one of these in your hand. As soon as you see a card hit the discard pile, encounter discard pile, which has a letter which matches a card in your hand, you play out Shadow of the Past, you put that card back onto the encounter deck, you discard that one card from your hand, reveal the top card, boom, you're through.
Nice. Yeah, really useful.
I managed to do it once.
And did you manage to quest through as well?
Yeah. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. So, in my mind, I thought, well, that just solves the game. It's like, that's how you do it. That's how you beat this. And I played it for, I don't know how many times. But once it pulled off. And it was like, sometimes I just never see Shadow of the Past, and sometimes it would just, I would never have a card in my hand. I think at one point I had like 14 cards in my hand and none of them ever matched.
I think you probably want S's because you've got Striking Tentacle, you've got Stair Falls,
yeah,
and you've got Stagnant something or other.
Yeah.
Maybe S is a good one.
Yeah, yeah. And probably the only card in my hand which has an S is Shadow of the Past, and I've just used that to put it back on top.
Yeah. There's a flaw in this logic. That's exactly the kind of thing that happens in this game, though, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. Do you know what? I might, you know, I said I'd never, ever want to play this game again. Not this game. This quest. No, but actually, I am tempted, just for one time's sake, just for a giggle, I am going to look at the names of all the encounter cards, and I'm going to build a deck specifically... Probably
just to do it that way.
Just to do it that way.
Do you know what you should do? You should make a deck which gets you through the Doors of Durin and kills the Watcher, and then go through your 5 quest. How about that? There you go. That's the challenge of this game. No. That's how much time have I got?
No. In theory, that's the deck I've got. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. Well, good luck with that. I think I will give this deck, which I put together before, just maybe one or two goes before I play the next quest along, just to prove whether it's a fluke or not.
Yeah, that's a good one. But also maybe just to get you back into the swing of playing the game. Yeah,
well, exactly. So what were your overall feelings on this quest, Ben?
Okay, at first, I really enjoyed it, and I can't stress this enough. I do think it's a very, very well designed quest.
Yeah, I agree. It is. Yeah.
But I have just been beaten down by it, and it's of our own making. It's because we haven't recorded a podcast. It's our own fault. If we'd recorded a podcast last end of March, then I would have only played it like 3 or 4 times, and we would probably have finished this cycle by now.
Yeah. I think that's probably right. I mean, from my perspective, I remember playing this the first. If I was, thinking back when I came across that deck I put together when I beat it, whenever that was. I remember I tried a whole bunch of other things beforehand, and at that point, where I was still relatively new to the game, and I'm by no means a seasoned veteran at this point either. But it was a good one in terms of deck design, where you really got to think about what's really specific for this quest.
Yeah.
So it was good for that. I don't generally like the more sort of fight-heavy stuff, but I did enjoy this one because of the theming and what you were saying earlier, in that it's, you get the sense of this chaotic thing going on, tentacles everywhere. But, you know, I think if you get into that kind of imaginative mind space while you're playing it, it's actually really enjoyable. But I think you're right, yeah, if you played it 12 times in a row, you've been beaten 12 times in a row, it can be a bit disheartening, can't it?
Over the space of 18 months.
It still gets a thumbs up for me, this one. I do enjoy it. And I would say difficulty-wise, what you said earlier, it's like 4 or 5 two-player, but 8 or 9 solo, something like that. So,
you think in solo there is a magic formula to beat it. And I really thought Shadows of the Past is it.
Oh, it's this deck.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to prove that by sailing through it 2 times in a row of the exact same deck. I'm not.
Okay. Well, I don't think we should harp on about this for much longer. I really am ready to put it to bed. Although I must say I have been slightly reinvigorated to maybe try and put together a bizarro crafty deck, which is purely about using the magic words to open the gate. So I think I might still have a little look at that. But what I would say is there is genuinely a high chance, this is a mistake saying this, I know, that we won't take too long to record another episode because we will be moving on to player cards again, which means we don't have to spend a year playing a quest.
Yeah. And, well, how entitled is it? But, you know, what we just touched on very briefly earlier, hoping that things will open up a hell of a lot more for both of us going forward as well. So fingers crossed, hopefully we'll get a few more in the can in a much shorter period of time than we did before. We've made this promise before, though.
Yeah, so I know.
You know, but that is honestly, dear listener, the intention. So, you know.
Yeah, and we do love doing it.
Yeah. And playing the game and doing the podcast is fun, you know, and that's the whole reason we do it in the first place. So, we just got to make it happen by hook or by crook.
Okay, so that's the intention. So I think with that, it is time to wrap things up. And thank you once again for listening, for sticking with us after all this time. And I hope you've enjoyed what you've heard and you'll come back to us next time. So until then, take care out there and goodbye.
Bye.